Standing in the Gap, locally, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you, Barry.
Great to be with you too, sir.
As always, we'd like to do it face-to-face, but we can't. So we're doing it the second best way.
Well, that's fine. But on yesterday's program, we were talking about statesmen. We were talking about people who are standing up for the Constitution. Well, we seem to have one of those individuals here in the state of Ohio. We probably have more than that, but at least one who's made himself publicly known on this issue. And that is State Representative Ron Young from the Northeast Ohio area. He's a representative from Lake County. And he's no stranger to dealing with issues because he served for four terms in the legislature, then left for a while, and then they asked him to run again, and he came back, and now he's serving his second term on this tour of duty. So he's been in the legislature for over 10 years now, on and off. And Representative Young is actually doing something, Chuck, that we said on a program yesterday that we would hope that more of our state officials would step up and do, and that is he's standing in the gap. He is standing up for the constitutionally limited form of government that we have under the United States Constitution. He's doing so in an interesting way. And Chuck, you know a little bit about this too, because you and I have both met with Representative Young on this issue. And so why don't I let you fill our listeners in a little bit on the background of what's going on?
Well, basically what he's doing is he has taken a look at the historical record, and he has noted that this particular thing has been used numerous times, and we're talking about nullification, has been used numerous times in the past. We need to talk about what nullification is. A lot of people get it into their head that nullification is vaguely connected to slavery.
Well, it is, but not in the way that they connect it.
No, that's right. It's vaguely anti-slavery. It's actually more than vaguely. It is one of the safeguards that the Founding Fathers foresaw as one of the tools that might be used to combat a tyrannical government. An attempt by a tyrannical government to seize authority that is maintained by the states or by the people. Now, we need to go back to the 9th and 10th Amendment. And the 9th says that the specific outlining of rights in this Constitution does not mean that there are not other rights that aren't mentioned. That basically all rights that are there but not specifically mentioned are maintained by the people. And the 10th Amendment says that all authority not specifically delegated to the federal government in the Constitution are reserved to the states and to the people respectively. It's that 10th Amendment that gives the right for the states to nullify federal law if there is a good constitutional case to be made that those rights that are affected are specifically retained by the states and the people respectively. In this case, we've been talking over the last couple days about the right to keep and bear arms. The fact is that the Second Amendment is unequivocal. Right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And the implication is, because it's the federal constitution, it's by the federal government. We've talked about this before. The states have the right to regulate gun ownership. If you really want to live in a state where gun ownership is heavily regulated, move to New York. But please don't try to bring New York here. I'm not interested in living in New York, and one of the reasons I don't want to live in New York is because I want to be able to have the right to defend myself. There are a number of other states. If I wanted to live in a gun-free zone and have myself be a constant target, I would live in Washington, D.C. or Chicago, but I don't want that. What has Ron Young done? He's gone back and looked at the historical precedents where the federal government has overstepped its boundaries and the people and the states have stepped in and nullified those laws. That happened I had a very long, interesting discussion over somebody about the original nullification crisis in the 1830s, in the 1820s and 30s, while Andrew Jackson was president. And I don't want to go too far into that, but the fact is that this person claimed that Andrew Jackson won the day. And I'm like, well, you don't know your history very well, because what happened in that case, it was a tariff, and it was a terrible tariff. It was an import on goods that the South specifically needed, and the tariff was being raised to essentially a confiscatory rate. And because the South was an agrarian economy, it had to import goods. It was not a manufacturing economy. So where did they import goods from? Well, they imported a lot of stuff from Europe. And the North had a kind of a protectionist thing for Northern industry. Part of the tariff was part of the protectionist law. Okay, so what happens? South Carolina basically says, well, you can't collect that here. They passed the Nullification Acts. They had a convention. The way it's done is via a convention normally. And they said that law is null and void, so you're not going to collect that tariff here. Andrew Jackson had kind of a fit, and there were a number of very intricate political maneuvers that went on. But in essence, what happened was there was an enforcement bill passed by Congress. They were going to send federal troops. Well, that's all well and good because at the time, South Carolina had a rather large and active militia. So there were more than enough South Carolina militiamen to handle any federal troops that might show up to try to handle that. So essentially what happened was Congress came in, looked at the tariff and said, you know, you're right. It's really too high. So they lowered the tariff rate. Now, in the end, who actually won the tariff battle between South Carolina and the United States of America? Who do you think won?
South Carolina.
South Carolina won. They said, we're not going to pay this tariff. And they ended up not paying the tariff, and they got the tariff rate lowered. So this person said, but they got the federal government passed the Enforcement Act. And I said, yes, and it was never used. And there's a reason it was never used, because there was very good chance at the time that the federal government would have lost. And Andrew Jackson knew that. Now, Andrew Jackson is kind of a mixed bag regarding constitutionality, and we don't want to go too much into that. But the fact is, he got the picture, but he was also someone who believed in strong central federal authority, which is not always acknowledged. He was a mixed bag on that question. Now, the fact is, there have been lots of other things that have come through that have been nullified. We talked about Real ID. We've talked about a number of things that have been passed, and everybody just said, not going to do it. A number of states have just said, nope, we're not doing it. We're not complying with that. It's a real shame that it didn't happen with the whole TSA Act, the Transportation Security Administration. And it should have happened, because that is a testament to how the government can get it wrong, because it has gotten it wrong. It completely asserted itself into the running of airports, which are for some reason under federal authority. I've never quite understood why, but it is. And they just stepped in and took over. Again, we're about to do it in a number of states regarding gun control. But one of the things that Ron Young is working on, he has taken a look at how Ohio handled and continues to handle the Obamacare situation.
Yes.
Because Barry, as many of you know and remember, because many of you voted for it, Obamacare was essentially nullified in the Ohio Constitution.
Right. It was issue 3, the Healthcare Freedom Amendment.
And so far, it really has stopped. For instance, John Kasich refused to negotiate for these federal exchange system on the basis of that amendment to the Constitution.
Correct.
And he was correct in doing that. Now, again, I think that was politically motivated because he saw what margin that thing passed by. That thing passed by a giant margin. People don't want it. They didn't want it. And the fact is, everybody knows what that law is to do, is to nullify Obamacare. Now, it remains to be seen. We're getting arguments now that, of course, the Supremacy Clause overrides Ohio's Constitution.
Well, and let's chat about that just for a moment, Chuck, because I think that our listeners are probably going to hear that, and they're going to be a little confused because, yes, Article 6 of the United States Constitution does specifically state that this Constitution and the laws of the United States made in pursuance thereof and all treaties made under the authority of the United States are the supreme law of the land. Well, that's great. So, and then it says the laws of the states and the judges therein are bound by, that they are subject to or under the supreme law. In other words, if you were to pass a law or put something in the state constitution that violated the federal dictates there of the Constitution, those laws, and those treaties, then it's null and void. That's what the Supremacy Clause is all about. And, you know, Chuck, it sounds on the face of it like all these efforts toward nullification are just now totally without any merit because the courts have said it's constitutional. Ah, but see, but there's a problem right there, Chuck, and it's three little words in the Article 6, that many people who want to use that as their trump card want to gloss over or totally ignore, and it's the words "in pursuance thereof" in reference to the laws that are made in this country. You see, the laws that are made, i.e. law that is law, is ones that are made in pursuance thereof. Well, in pursuance thereof to what? In pursuance thereof to the Constitution of the United States, which spells out the powers of the lawmaking branch of Congress in Article 1, Section 8 through Section 10, which tells them what enumerated powers they have, in other words, what they can speak on, what is prohibited to them to do, and what the states are prohibited to doing outside of the 10th Amendment, which gives them all the rest of the authority. Chuck, nowhere in Article 1, Sections 8, 9, or 10, or in the 10th Amendment, or anywhere else in the Constitution for that matter, is there any legitimization or authorization for the lawmaking branch, Congress, to weigh in on health care?
Oh, absolutely none. Nowhere in Article 1, Section 8, Section 9, or Section 10 is there anything that could be construed as having anything to do with the federal takeover of health care.
Right.
But the fact is that this has been no impediment for quite some time. And what is done is that very, shall we say, complex and convoluted arguments are created to tie it back to the Interstate Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, or even worse, the General Welfare Clause. And fact is that the courts have allowed these to stand now, oh gosh, going back as far as the 1830s under the Marshall Court. But it didn't take serious root until the late 1930s during the Roosevelt administration, although it did have some effect during the, unfortunately, during the Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft years. But that being said, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely patently absurd to expect the Supreme Court to step in and limit federal power. They are the federal government, Barry. And of course, the Supreme Court is always going to find in favor of federal power.
That's true.
That's precisely why the 10th Amendment is written. It's written to give the states, and this is why the doctrine of the principles of 98, which is where nullification comes from, this is something that arose in the 1798 with the Virginia resolves and the Kentucky resolves to nullify the Alien and Sedition Acts, which actually cost John Adams his second term as president. Thomas Jefferson was elected because of his outlining of the principles of 98, he and James Madison. And what those basically said was that the states will declare those laws null and void if they don't comport with the Constitution. And remember John Marshall's famous statement that a law repugnant to the Constitution is no law at all. Well, not only the Supreme Court has the power to decide that, the other bodies that have the right to decide that are the state legislatures.
And, now, that's absolutely true, because they are standing in between a unconstitutional federal government dictate and the people. They must, as the part of their duty, stand up against that usurpation, because nowhere in Article 1 does it prohibit the state from doing that, and the 10th Amendment specifically spells out that if it's not specifically enumerated, I'm paraphrasing, and given authority to the federal government, then it's reserved to the states or to the people.
Yeah, exactly. And again, expecting the federal government to decide in the favor of the states, it's not going to do that. It's always going to find in favor of itself. That's why constitutional interpretation cannot be left specifically to the Supreme Court alone.
That's correct.
In fact, it's not even in the federal constitution. It's not left to the Supreme Court alone. It's left to the executive branch, the judicial branch, and the legislative branch. All three branches have a duty to interpret the Constitution. And in fact, the body that has the most power and yet wields it the least is Congress.
Amazing.
Yeah, that being said, what can you do? Now, Barry, I think what we're going to talk a little bit further, I think, about this doctrine of, it's called interposition.
Yeah, it's the doctrine of interposition.
Yeah, where the lower magistrate stands between the higher magistrate and the people. And that's what this is all about. It's a biblical doctrine. I believe we're going to discuss it more this week, but we are out of time for this week. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.